The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome in to the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up later on in the show, Sid Lowe will be here to reflect on Real Madrid whining about the weather. Plus, Casey Keller and Steve Cherundolo to wax lyrical about Erling Haaland and talk about Matthew Hoppe, of course, the hat-trick hero for Schalke. We'll start, though, in England. The draw was made for the fourth round, indeed fifth round, of the FA Cup today. And there's one tie, really, that has caught all the headlines. It's a little matter of Manchester United against Liverpool at Old Trafford. Don Hutchison and Steve Nicol with us. Ooh, Stevie, tasty.
I would suggest it's tasty for everybody else, but not for Manchester and Liverpool fans. You know, at the end of the day, you want to be getting to the semis and the final, and the easier route that you can take to get there is the best one. But for everybody else, as I said, it's fantastic. And as usual, I think both sides will put out a proper team and it should be a great game. But unfortunately, we're going to lose one of them early in the tournament.
No, it's great for the neutral. It's exactly what we want. A big, big, proper match. Something we've been desperate for.
Well, you mate.
But no, I know. Sorry for being objective in this. But it's exactly what you want, Don, isn't it?
No, it is. It is. Stevie's right, though. You're going to lose one of the big ones. But who cares? You know, the draw's not been great in terms of, you know, Premier League teams meeting each other. Some romantic stories out there. But that's the big one. When you look at that Man U Liverpool game, a week after the league game as well, It's weird how you sort of see big teams partnered against each other in the league and then the following week they get drawn against each other in a cup competition. So they're going to get pretty familiar.
Yeah, that's it, Stevie. And we've talked about this on the show before. As Don rightly says, these two matches, league and then cup, come very quickly after one another. What's that like?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that it is extremely unusual that one team wins both. Having been in that situation on many, many occasions, depending on the result of the first one, the other one goes completely different. So, I guess if you're Liverpool, do you want to win the FA Cup game? Or do you want to win the Premier League game? And it's the same question for Manchester United. I mean, when you go into it, you think, all right, we'll win both. But as I said, experience tells me, and being involved in it many, many times, no one team wins both. And so I guess if you ask both of these sides, which one do you want to win? I suggest that both would say the Premier League game.
I think that's right, isn't it, Don? The Premier League, the priority for both of these sides. But for Manchester United, you could argue this is their most likely way of winning a trophy this season.
I think so. I think if you ask Liverpool fans right here, right now, right, which game do you want to win? Stevie said, you're right, you're not going to win both. Which one do you want to win? They'll say Man U in the league and then field a weakened side against Man U in the FA Cup and Man U can go through. And exactly the same for Man U fans. They'll want to turn over Liverpool in the league at Anfield because it puts down a marker. I think we'd all have to sit up and take notice if Man U go to Anfield and beat Liverpool. That's a big statement. They are real contenders to try and win the league. And then we'll see which teams get put out. There'll be strong sides, I would imagine, in the FA Cup. Not full strength because of the fixture schedule. But it's great to see. I think it's brilliant when you see two teams like Man U and Liverpool playing each other in the league, then the following week in the FA Cup. It's going to be great viewing for the neutral.
Now, back in the day, Steve Nicol used to be responsible for picking the Premier League team of the week. It was the bane of his life. He would moan about it all the time and try and get out of it. What do you mean? You did. You used to moan about it all the time to us.
Now, where you go.
That is completely true. Do not pretend.
Your stories. Hey, you're making up nonsense again.
All right, then. What would they say? Stevie, do you mind doing it again for us?
Absolutely, no problem.
Oh, my goodness, what's happened to you? So we thought we'd wind him up and ask him to do the FA Cup team of the week, expecting a whole lot of abuse back. Within 10 minutes, Stevie, you sent it to us. You took it very seriously.
Well, of course I do. I'm a professional.
Oh.
I take everything seriously.
Oh,
did you do that, Stevie? Did you do that?
Of course I did. Of course I did.
I don't believe him, Dan.
Well, when the producer... Listen, when the producer sends you a message and says, can you put together an FA Cup team of the week, what am I going to reply? Shove it up your jumper.
Yes, that's what you normally would do.
Off the way, don't make me see you in your stories, Thomas.
How do you pronounce the Crawley left back?
Sorulu.
Sorula.
Sorula. That's not bad off the top of your head.
Hey,
all right, Tunnicliffe.
No, that's true.
How about Richards for Doncaster?
There you go. Stevie can't see that.
I don't even have it in front of me. In fact, I'll tell you the team. Dubravka.
No, we just saw the team.
Hutchins. Oh, you've just shown... Well, I can't see it. I can only see myself.
I know. So there we go. We just saved you time. We weren't going to... What were you... How do you think we were going to do it? Just not show the team?
I want to hear him name the team, Dan.
I was expecting you to show the team, but I thought, just to let you know that I knew the team and I remember who I picked before you showed it. I didn't know you showed it because I can't see. All I can see is myself.
And how's name that? It, Stevie. Name it.
Not a bad team, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Name it.
Don, shut up, Don. Don't encourage it. Don, do you have any problems with that team? I can't believe we discussed it this year.
No. I watched like a million minutes of every game of the weekend, but I didn't watch a full 90 minutes. I was just flicking for fun. So I couldn't tell you who played well.
What stood out for you, Don, from your flicking?
Vinicius got a hat-trick. Yes. Gareth Bale was on the bench against Marine, and I'm thinking, what on earth is he doing there? What's the point? What's the point of Bale being at Tottenham, sitting on the bench against Marine?
Yeah, it's been a big waste of money, hasn't it, for Spurs?
What's the point? What's the point? Surely Daniel Levy has the conversation with Jose Mourinho. Do you really want him? Do you want him at this football club? I know he's had injuries and he's trying to sort of get going, but they could be saving a lot of money and spending it on, I don't know, some youngsters coming through or someone that's going to, you know, push for a first-team place. It seems a bit romantic to me, but having Bale on the bench against Marine and not really contributing in the Premier League seems a waste.
It's not quite romantic, is it, that? Stevie, for you, what stood out for you from all the games that you watched?
Well, I told you Dele Alli, obviously.
Yep.
But I think if you look at, you know, people like Aubameyang and Werner, Havertz, Mount scoring, you know, Mane and Salah scoring, I think the FA Cup games were good for players who recently have found it hard to hit the back of the net. All got on the score sheet, so all the teams go through, but more importantly, the goal scorers get some goals.
Anything else, Don, as we stretch out this segment?
No, Chorley beating Leeds. My social media feed's been on fire because I'm trying to defend Bielsa. I love Bielsa. I love everything about him. I love how his team tries to play, how aggressive they are, and they get
Crawley,
turned over the weekend. Then all of a sudden, I've got to try and defend myself in Bielsa, which I found it incredibly hard. So I just think that the smaller teams getting through is a good story, but no real spectacular games, I didn't think.
Oh, look, Stevie's headphones falling out with excitement. Right, the Premier League, of course, returns this week. A number of games, including Burnley against Manchester United on Tuesday. United with a chance to go top of the table. Anywhere United don't win this game, Stevie?
Absolutely, yeah, there's a chance they don't win this game. Listen, Burnley don't give points away. I think they lost a few to City and they lost a few to Chelsea. But every other game they've had has been, you know, the losses or the wins have been 1-0. And of course, they've had some draws that have all been 1-1. So they don't generally give an awful lot away. So, yes. And of course, listen, we were talking last week about a statement Pogba made about how, you know, Manchester United need to be better on set pieces. Well, I'll tell you what, if there's one team you don't want to be giving set pieces away to, it's Burnley. So, yeah, listen, Man United absolutely are favourites, but this is no foregone conclusion. And honestly, if Burnley won this game, is it really a huge shock? I don't think so.
Yes, it is, Stevie. It's a big shock, man.
It's not a huge shock, Dan.
Of course
Come
it
on.
Is.
It wouldn't be a huge shock.
Yes, it is, Stevie.
It'd be a bit of a surprise, but it wouldn't be a huge... It wouldn't be like headline news, Burnley beating
Yes,
beating
of course it would be big news. Burnley
Off
beating Manchester
weave.
United, who people are talking about as title contenders.
So you'd be completely shocked?
Yes, I would.
Burnley beat... Oh, shosh. I mean, don't be so stupid.
Why?
A team that's... A team in Burnley that either wins 1-0 or loses 1-0 tells you they give nothing away, and every single game's a slog against them. They've lost two games by more than a goal all season, and you're going to say that it'd be a huge shock. Come on.
Don, would it be a huge shock if Burnley win tomorrow?
I would be absolutely stunned if Burnley beat Man United tomorrow. What I would say in Stevie's defence, though, Burnley beat them 2-0 last season. Chris Wood scored and Rodriguez scored an absolute worldie. They beat them 2-0.
They beat them 2-0? Oh, my God. What a shock that must have been.
Steve, there's no way Burnley beat Man United tomorrow.
You just said, I'll be completely and utterly astounded. And then you went, oh, by the way, they beat them 2-0 last year.
Well, they did. But this is a different Man U side.
Yeah. Listen, if it had been one of these things, well, Burnley's not beaten United for 25 years or whatever.
Bro, Fernandes wasn't there. Mm. I'd be stunned.
You'd be stunned, Stevie, not surprised. I think that's what we've gathered. We will be reflecting on Burnley against Manchester United. Who will be stunned? Who will be shocked? Who will be surprised? We will find out. And, of course, we'll be discussing that.
I hope I'm on.
Is he on tomorrow, Pete?
Yes.
He doesn't know. Oh, you are on tomorrow. There we go.
I am.
Let's see. Let's see if we'll be surprised.
If I don't make it, it might be because I've been shocked. The Burnley won.
Oh, Craig will be here as well. He won't be bothered. That's what we know 100% sure about that.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Just a reminder how things stand after this weekend's action, or non-action, of course, for Atleti. Their match against Athletic Bilbao was postponed because of the weather. Barcelona with a 4-0 victory away against Granada. But we'll start with Real Madrid as we welcome in. It must be Sid Lowe with the dog barking in the background. Sid, Real Madrid 0, Osasuna 0, but that's not really the story. The story around this is the moaning that we've heard from the Real Madrid camp after the match about the conditions and about how this match should never have taken place in the first place. I watched this game, Sid, and the conditions didn't seem that bad.
No, I mean, obviously, me and you are of a generation, Dan, where we've seen hundreds of football games played on pitches far, far worse than this one. I think in terms of the quality of the surface, it was actually to Osasuna's enormous credit that they produced a pitch as good as this, given the conditions, given how much it had snowed during the night before, but in particular during the day of the game, given how cold it was as well. I thought in that sense they did a really, really good job. To be fair to Real Madrid, the complaints are kind of focused on the whole thing, not just the conditions themselves, on the fact that they were inside a plane waiting to see if they could take off for 3 hours the night before, the fact that they'd travelled earlier than they would have liked but later than the league had asked them to, the fact that I think that in some cases some of them were genuinely worried about the conditions they were travelling in, and of course the fact that they got to Pamplona to play the game, but getting out of Pamplona and getting home again was a different matter.
Instinctively, Sid, I just want to say boo-hoo.
Well, I mean, look, on one level, I can understand why you would say that. And I can understand why a lot of people's response to this has been to say, well, so what? You know, lots of people have had delayed flights before. Lots of people have been stuck before. They're stuck in a very nice hotel. That's not a major problem. But I do have some degree of sympathy for Real Madrid. And I think you have to look at this in two different ways. And that's the thing that I think part of this, look, let's put the context into place. This is the biggest snowstorm central Spain has seen for 50 years. Real Madrid were inside a plane, not sure if they were taking off for 3 hours on the runway at Barajas Airport. That plane took off at a point to which nothing else was leaving the airport. And there's all sorts of question marks about why was it that that plane got out and all the others didn't, almost as if this was Air Force One. You know, this flight must get there. Real Madrid get there, they get there later than they want to. And as I say, I think some of them were were worried about the conditions. And the condition of the game, I think, is very different to the condition of the everything that goes around it. And I think that however well paid footballers are, I think however well looked after they are, that doesn't change the fact that they're still human beings, put in simple terms, and that there are elements of what happens that worry them. And of course, they are used to the very, very, very best conditions in terms of travel, in terms of how they're looked after and so on. So I can see why some of them reacted badly. That said, I wouldn't take it to, and this is why I say there's two stages to it, I wouldn't take that to the condition of the pitch itself, which I don't think was too bad, and I wouldn't take that to necessarily be a deciding factor in the way that the game played out, because bear in mind, we've seen this kind of performance from Real Madrid on numerous occasions when the weather's been really quite significantly different.
You talk about that performance, Sid, and yes, we have seen those sort of 90 minutes from Real Madrid before, and unfortunately, we've seen these sort of performances from Eden Hazard pretty much exclusively since he's made that move from Chelsea. What happens? What's going to happen with him?
I don't know the answer to that, because it feels like Zidane is trying very hard to get him back into the team, that he's very quick to put Hazard in when he thinks that he's fit and when he thinks that he can play him. I think he knows that Hazard is different to the players that he's got, and if he can get Hazard and Benzema to play alongside each other and understand each other, that's a really nice forward line. They're two players with very similar ideas of how to play the game, but I think complementary to each other. The problem, of course, with Hazard is you don't get continuity, you don't get him fully fit for very long, and then when he is fit, he doesn't always produce really good performances. In fact, I think you're right to say that he really hasn't at all. I must confess, and apologies for saying this, but I speak off the top of my head, I can't remember a really great performance from Hazard at Real Madrid. Not one. I mean, there must be some. There must be some that I can't think of. But I can't off the top of my head remember one. Now, I think he's been desperately unlucky with injuries. I think he's been unlucky with the timing of those injuries as well, with the kind of consistency of them. But it is difficult to see how Real Madrid handle this, except, of course, to say that I think Zidane will continue to do what he's done until now, which is to play Hazard whenever he can, to try and play him into form. And I think that, in truth, I think that's the only thing he can do, at least until the end of the season. Now, if this was to continue to the end of the season, and hopefully it won't, then I guess Real Madrid would have a decision to make.
Meanwhile, Barcelona, start of the year well, Sid. Good performance, Messi scoring goals, Griezmann looking like the Antoine Griezmann of old. Reasons to be optimistic? Has Ronald Koeman got it right? Has he finally found the pieces to his puzzle that fit?
Well, I think there are some very positive signs from Barcelona's point of view. I mean, Koeman himself said this. He said that they seem to be more focused now, there's more concentration. And he actually said, which I thought was a very bold thing to say, given how quickly things can go wrong and how quickly you can be made to look foolish. He said, when we get it right and when we're like this, very few teams can deal with us. Which I suppose is broadly true, but it's still the kind of pugnacious remark you don't necessarily expect a manager to come up with, particularly one who's struggled so far this season. But I think there is a sense that the way they're set up now with a third midfielder is a little bit more rational. The occupation of space feels better, the understanding between players feels like it's improved. Pedri in particular is very, very good news for Barcelona. Finding a performance out of Griezmann is important. And then of course there's Messi himself. Now Messi all season, even when he's been playing reasonably well, has lacked the precision that we've seen in previous years. That classic Messi shot coming in off the right-hand side, bent inside of his left foot into the top corner, has been going wide, or it's been going just over the bar, or it's been getting blocked. This weekend, he scored the first of the classic Messi goals that he scored all season. He then scored a free kick, which is his first for 71 free kicks. And so that kind of touch of precision that partly always defined Messi and that seemed to have deserted in the season is now coming back. It feels like he's getting his range. And he's now top scorer, and he's top scorer out ahead on his own in this, which seemed to be the worst season of his career so far.
So as I mentioned at the top, Atleti didn't play. Their game against Atleti Bilbao was postponed. Sid, you tweeted, Atleti 3 games in hand, but I'm not sure that's good for them. Why isn't that good? That's great, isn't it? Win those, you've got a big old lead at the top of the table. What are you talking about?
Now, look, of course it's good for them on the face of it, in that what we're saying here, by definition, is Atletico Madrid are top. And they've got 3 games that they could effectively throw away now, and they would still be top. I think part of the problem, though, is that, of course, we make the assumption, and I include myself in this, we go, OK, so they're 1 point clear, they've got 3 games in hand, this is potentially 10 points clear. But I think given how compact the league title is going to be this year anyway, in terms of the number of games that you have to play. I don't think you want to be in a position where those games are accumulating, where at some stage you may be forced to really squeeze them in when you wouldn't have wanted to. In other words, the game that Atletico Madrid didn't play this weekend, by not playing it, they haven't gained anything. They haven't gained anything at all. They've just got to play that game another day. So you could say, well, it could be another 3 points, yeah, but it would have been better to have played this weekend and had those 3 points and be 4 points clear and only have two more to play. They play one of those games in hand tomorrow night. They will be obviously very pleased to get that out of the way if they can. But at the moment, there isn't a date in which to play that game against Athletic Club. And let's think about the scenario here. That game, which has to be rearranged, the likely date, if they do come up with this, I think will be just before they play Chelsea in the Champions League. So, of course, looking at it from Atletico's point of view, do you think to yourself, would they have rather played this weekend or had that game coming up when they're trying to prepare a Chelsea match? So, look, their position is great, but I think they'd have rather played those games and maybe, who knows, won one of them or two of them or three of them or whatever it may have been, than have those games waiting for them. Not least because I think emotionally as well, it puts a certain degree of pressure on them.
But you just feel, Sid, they are huge favourites, aren't they?
Oh, of course they are. Look, I mean, and they are not just because it's Atletico Madrid who are playing very well, but they're huge favourites because, as we say, let's do the maths, and the maths, yeah. you can't take anything for
granted. And the chasing
granted,
pack aren't as good. Real Madrid are going to drop points. Barcelona, you know, despite the fact they're looking better, aren't going to close that gap either.
Well, I mean, let's look at it again from the mathematical point of view. You know, it's 1 point clear of Real Madrid, but it's 4 points clear of Barcelona. So win the games in hand, and the gap is really huge to Barcelona, the kind of gap that you just do not overturn in a league title race. I must admit, while we haven't been massively convinced by Real Madrid, I do think that over the last 5 weeks or so, they've started to gather momentum despite what happened at Osasuna at the weekend. And so I still think Real Madrid can push them close. I think what Atletico will be very, very keen to do, and I know this is stating the obvious, but because I don't think they want to be in a position where they have to get those games in hand, one, I think they want to be in a position where it would be nice to win those games in hand. I think it's really, really important that they win the first of those this week. I think it's really important that the first of those three games in hand, the first of those potentially 9 points that they can get away from the rest of the teams with, I think it's really important that they get the first three of those.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much. More Sid on Extra Time today. He's along with Don and Stevie answering your tweets. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Stats aren't bad, are they, for Erling Haaland? What an impact he made in Dortmund's 3-1 victory against Leipzig at the weekend. Here to talk more about the Norwegian star, Casey Keller and Steve Cherundolo with us. Steve, his performance in the second half was so special, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I think you're seeing all the components of a top world-class forward kind of growing week to week. I mean, in 25 games, 25 goals, I believe, in Bundesliga competition. He can beat you in all ways. He can beat you with his head. He can beat you on the dribble. He can beat you in combination play. He really is the full package, and being so young already, it's quite impressive. And I really enjoy watching him. Sometimes I catch myself watching him more as a fan than as an analyst, but he really is the whole package, and he's going to be one certainly leading his generation on.
But that's nothing to be ashamed of almost, Casey, because anyone who loves football has got to love this guy.
Definitely. And you see a desire. And I mean, if you talk to Jurgen Klinsmann about strikers, they should have this desire regardless if it's a five-a-side, if it's a friendly, if it's a match in the Bundesliga, if it's a national team game, they have this desire to score goals. And if they score one goal that match, they're disappointed because they felt they should have scored two. If they scored two, they're disappointed because they should have gotten a hat trick. And you see that from Haaland. He doesn't score off a good chance. You see how disappointed he is. He wants to score goals regardless of the competition. And that's a big, big reason why he is going to continue to be one of the best goal scorers in the world for years to come.
What about those that are saying, Steve, hey, we need to cool our jets a little bit about this guy because it's only the Bundesliga and anyone can score lots of goals there?
Yeah, well, I certainly didn't manage to do that, but maybe I wasn't much of a goal scorer.
I didn't either, Steve.
Don't feel too bad. Well, I don't think so. I think the hype is legitimate because he checks all the boxes. He has the physical components to beat you. He has the technical, the tactical. And Casey touched on one of the most important ones for goal scorers, it's the mentality. And I think if you look at how he structured his career already, moving from one club to another, he knows that Borussia Dortmund is a stepping stone. That's how he set this whole thing up. He actively looked out for Borussia Dortmund and not a bigger club. He could have gone to a bigger club. But he chose to go to Dortmund because it is a stepping stone. He's gonna continue to move on and improve in his career. And these are the players, that clubs really need to identify quick. Those are the ones that can improve, who want to improve, and have the mentality to not be complacent with where he's at right now. And I've been impressed so far, and I'm looking forward to more.
If you're building Casey Keller FC, Casey, who's ahead of him? Which strikers? Lewandowski? Who else?
Well, yeah, I mean, some of it also depends on, are you building Casey Keller FC with unlimited funds? But obviously he's going to have an expensive price tag. I think the only thing where maybe a handful of people would be above him is simply because they already have that pedigree. They've already done it. You look at a Lewandowski, you look at a Harry Kane, maybe an Mbappe, except for my only question with Mbappe is that desire factor. I see so much more in Haaland. So, yes, there's some guys that have done it for several years more than this gentleman, and maybe that's the only reason why they're ahead of the pick. But this kid is definitely one of those players that comes along in a few generations. And the question mark now is just how high can he go and will he fulfill that potential?
What about for you, Steve? Unlimited funds, don't worry about that. You're loaded. Looking at it, Lewandowski, Kane, and Mbappe, are they the three you'd have ahead of him?
I think I would add into Lukaku in there. I think Lukaku is also a complete forward. He can score, he can combine. He definitely, with his presence on the field, will occupy two central defenders. So he's helping our team in many ways. I don't see Mbappe being as good as those three. So for me, it's Kane, Lukaku, and Lewandowski.
Julian Laurent is going for you now, Steve. Meanwhile, Bayern Munich, of course, losing on Friday against Borussia Mönchengladbach and losing by conceding three goals. And defensively, a lot of question marks now about Hansi Flick's side. This is a team, let's not forget, 15 games this season. They've only kept two clean sheets. Casey, do they need to change the way they're playing? Because clearly, defensively, it's not working for them.
Yeah, I just don't think they have the personnel right now to be able to play the high line that they want to play. Look, I love the way they play. It makes it so entertaining for everybody. But there's a point. You go back to the performance from Nicolas Sulla. And in some ways, yes, you can blame Sulla. But at the same time, his manager put him in a position that he's just not physically capable to be able to play that way. And I think right now with the personnel that Hansi Flick has available, he needs to alter the way they're playing. They need to have that line of confrontation be, 15 yards deeper to allow Sulla or Boateng or an Alaba, who we're still questioning, is he still 100% there mentally, a Bayern defender, because there's just too much space to run in behind, and those center backs just aren't capable to run with players. I mean, Hoffman made two runs in behind that was so simple from a deeper position And the center backs with Bayern just watched them go, and they came in with acres of space and time to be able to beat Manuel Neuer. It was just too easy.
Do you agree, Steve?
Yeah, I think it's Hansi Flick has when he took over the team, he opted to move the lines forward and play a kind of a full press, and to really put teams on the back heels, and it was successful. And I think because of that defensive posture, they were able to create many chances in transition and create mistakes from the other team and capitalize on those. But I think it's always, as a coach, you're always looking to balance things out. And right now, they are conceding too many goals, especially on the transition. And their defenders are being caught in kind of a no man's land. It's, you don't know whether you're deep or you're up higher. It's sort of that classic midfield press that really nobody plays anymore. You're either deep or you're up high. And they're being caught. So I really think they have to do a better job of finding the right balance. When are we high and pressing? When is it successful? And against two, was maybe even a better question. And then when it's not available at the moment, then you need to drop deep and defend and make things compact and difficult to play around.
Bayern remain top of the Bundesliga. Meanwhile, at the other end, the big story was, of course, about Schalke winning their first game domestically for 31 matches. And who'd have thought it'd be a young American striker who'd be the hero?
Well, Schalke never been in a deeper hole than this. Rock bottom of the table. Schalke's mission clear. Win. Now the counter-attack for Schalke with pace. And Hoppy's in for Schalke! Magnificent finish! It's today their day! Harit's ball through, and Hoppe's away again. This is Matthew Hoppe, and what a day for him, and what a day for Schalke. Looks for Hoppe again. Oh, my word! You cannot write this kind of script. Matthew Hoppe, Schalke's hat-trick hero.
I don't know how to feel. I'm excited. I'm happy that the team got the win.
McKennie enjoying that more than most, seeing his former side finally register a win. Kicker, of course, is the big sports newspaper in Germany, and Hoppe on the front page of that. Steve, there's so many incredible elements to this story. One of them in particular is that in the interview that Hoppe did after the game, Schalke was asked basically, well, Schalke are going to still be looking for a new striker. How do you feel about that? And you think, I've just scored a hat-trick. I've just saved the day. I've just stopped this stupid historic run. And yet the club is still looking for another striker over me.
Well, that's not exclusive to Schalke. I think every club is looking for a striker. And that's just part of the business. And, you know, he's still a young player. It was a tough question to answer from the journalists, especially on his day to shine. But he will learn that that is a part of this business. As soon as you sign your first contract, the next day they're trying to replace you. It's the other side of the coin in professional football. But I think he should just enjoy this for the moment. He's helped his squad. He's played himself into the starting 11. In a poor side this season, but he still looked fantastic with those finishes. And those finishes what surprised me the most, that anytime you're so calm and collected in front of the goal, he's going to be able to do this again. And so I'm looking for him to score much more, much more.
Did you see this coming, Steve, from him?
Absolutely not. I have some contacts and friends at Schalke who are working on the staff as well. And, he's a player who works his tail off in training and in the games. He has good running, and I think you saw that on those finishes. He's very central and goal-oriented. Everything is moving towards goal. And it's pretty simple stuff. It's one and two touches, nothing fancy. That is really the key to goal scoring, keeping it simple. So if he continues this, I think we're going to see more from him. But to answer your question, I don't think that anybody expected him scoring 3 goals in their first win in over a year.
What a story for him, Casey.
No, it is. It's a huge story. And shame on that journalist for saying that at that moment. I mean, there was no reason for it. But also, it's understanding the situation that Schalke's in. Schalke very easily could have been 2-0 down in this match before Matthew Hoppe had the opportunity to score the goals. He's not going to get a ton of chances to score goals this season with how bad this Schalke side is. You know, we've talked about strikers in the past needing the service, needing the opportunities, needing the chances in front of goal. Look, he got them the other day. He took them with a tremendous amount of ability, the way he timed his runs, the composure that Steve was talking about was phenomenal. Now, he put himself on the radar, and we all know that careers are marathons. They're not sprints. And this kid gave himself a good opportunity. In the matches that I saw him play previous to this, he didn't have hardly any chances to score. Well, he took his chances today. Now, how can he build on that, knowing that this Schalke side needs to improve more or less in every position, somehow find a way to stay in the Bundesliga this year, and then try to strengthen it and get better. Have fun, enjoy the moment, but understand that you need to build off of this and continue to go even further.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. Well, the German Cup takes priority this week. We've got a couple of games for you. Tomorrow it's Bayer Leverkusen against Eintracht Frankfurt. 24 hours later, Holstein Kiel taking on Bayern Munich. Both those games kick off at 2:45 Eastern on ESPN3. And then another full round of domestic matches that will start on Friday. Bayer Leverkusen taking on Union Berlin. Then on Saturday, Borussia Dortmund take on Mainz. It's Wolfsburg against Leipzig. Sunday sees Bayern Munich play host to Freiburg. All of these matches available on ESPN+. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, it's the Italian Cup, isn't it, that dominates the schedule over the next few days. All of these matches available on ESPN+. All starts tomorrow. AC Milan taking on Torino. That's at 2:45. Then on Wednesday, early start. Fiorentina against Inter, then Napoli against Empoli. And it all finishes with Juventus against Genoa. And on Thursday, Sassuolo against Spal and Atalanta take on Cagliari. Taking a look at the Italian newspapers, watch out, Conte, Juve are coming. This is the reaction to their win against Sassuolo. Juve are scary. Meanwhile, Juve won't let go. That's the headlines. Juve closing the gap on the top of the table. Milan, though, remain top, don't they? Good news and bad news for Juve today. Dybala will be out for 2 to 3 weeks. Meanwhile, Weston McKennie and Chiesa have both been given a clean bill of health. Good news then for Juve, with the exception of Dybala. And what a match it is this weekend. Inter Milan against Juve. That is our feature game on ESPN+. Coverage will start at 2 o'clock. A comprehensive build-up to that clash. Don't forget, though, an interesting tie that starts things off this week in Italy. It is the Rome derby. Lazio against Roma, 2:45, live on ESPN+. The latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast is available to listen to now. Gab and Jules joined by Jan Arge Fjortoff. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Casey and to Steve. Stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. You've got Don, Stevie and Sid answering your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. John Hutchinson is here, as is Steve Nicol. Sid, what are you reading there?
I've been reading this magnificent book, Five League Titles and a Packet of Crisps.
And you opened it randomly to
Steve
a chapter
Nicholas
where Stevie was naked with his trousers above his head, swinging them round, and his wife got very upset.
Yeah, I promise this wasn't set up in any way. I genuinely went like that and went, I was standing there with my trousers above. I hope the whole book is like that, Steve. I haven't had the chance to go through it all just yet.
What were you doing with your trousers, Stevie? What was the moment?
I was doing striptease, Daniel.
I think we need some more details about this striptease.
Part of that performance means you've got to swing your trousers above your head. There you go.
And how did your wife, for example, react to this striptease, Stevie?
Not very well. I looked down to where, from where she was sitting, and she wasn't sitting anymore. She had gone.
What was that, Steve? Was it something with Ronnie Whelan?
It was Sammy Lee's.
Yeah, Ronnie Whelan's testimonial. Sammy Lee. Steve?
Sammy Lee.
Oh,
Sammy's delighted.
I've wasted the whole of my weekend watching FA Cup football. I was doing knowledge, I was doing prep. All I need to do is read the book.
Yeah, read Stevie's book. Go. That's fine.
Yeah.
Right?
There you go.
From Steve's book to snow. Sid, did you enjoy the snowstorm in Madrid? Were you able to make any snowmen? Well, it just so happens we have footage that we have found on Sid's social media. What do you mean? Oh, no, you put it up there.
You sent it.
If it's one that I put up, that's all right then. That's been filtered.
What's the first one? The snowman? And we're going to put up the snowman, Sid, with a Real Oviedo. You look a bit fed up in the background, to be honest.
Do I? Ah, well, there you go. It was cold.
Yeah, it's cold. It's snow. And then the dog in the snow. That's what everyone wants to see. How did Stella react?
Yes. Well, she was a little bit shocked the first time she went out because the snow was very, very deep and very soft. And so she took a step out and kind of disappeared into it. I don't think she was quite expecting that.
Snow is massively overrated, isn't it, Stevie?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's annoying. 5 minutes with the kids and you just want to get inside and warm. Everyone's wet, grumpy. Oh, dear.
Dan, what you do is you forget to put the gloves on.
Right, and then everything.
And I can assure you, you're straight back in after about 20 seconds when their hands are freezing.
Especially when you've got your trousers round over your head. It gets a bit chilly.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Right. This is a football show for football people. If Manchester United go top of the Premier League tomorrow and win, will you guys give them credit? Don?
Yeah. I got asked today who's in a title race and someone tried to suggest it was between 6 or 7 clubs. And I went, no. It's a 3-horse race, Man U, Man City and Liverpool. The biggest test is the Liverpool game. If Man U go to Liverpool and beat Liverpool, they are serious contenders. If Liverpool turn up, as they normally do in big games, and beat them, then I'm back in Liverpool probably being favourites.
Is that a regular occurrence? Were you in the supermarket and someone just went, oh, there are 6 or 7 teams in this race?
Yeah, I'm obviously that famous in the supermarket. Someone stopped me in my stride and asked me my opinion.
You went, no. Stevie, you hate Manchester United. Will you give them credit?
I think we've been giving them credit over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Through gritted teeth, some have suggested.
So is it credit or not, regardless of the teeth?
Well, I think the teeth are relevant, aren't they?
Listen, if you give credit, you give credit. Whether you get right shot, your teeth clenched or whatever. Right?
Oh, there's one way to give credit.
I'll swing in your trousers. Can I swing my trousers above my head and give them credit?
Oh, God, what a moment that'll be tomorrow if they go top of the table. Something for everyone.
Yeah, right. I bet check with the wife first.
Well, we know what the hell. We know what that answer will be.
Yes.
Eden Hazard was suited to play for Real Madrid and Griezmann was not suited to play for Barca. After more than a season, Sid, and seeing their performance, did Griezmann suited well or Hazard just a flop transfer?
Well, Hazard is a player that's had a huge amount of injuries. And so it's very difficult to judge whether his transfer in the long run will be good or not. But so far, of course, it's been awful. And of course, you've got to look at this in the context of the deal itself. Hazard had 1 year left on his contract at Chelsea. In other words, Real Madrid this summer could have got him for free. So that first summer, all of the money they spent on Hazard was basically designed to get him for one season. And of course, that money hasn't been money well spent. Now, you never know how it will go. You never know what, but it was always going to be steep to pay upwards of 100 million euros for a player for one season to make sure that, of course, you got him for that season and then the seasons that followed. But so far, it hasn't worked at all. I don't think that necessarily, though, shows that he doesn't fit this team. It just shows that it hasn't gone well for him so far.
Sid, how far do you think Barcelona will go in the Champions League this season, given their recent good form? Is it PSG, isn't it, next up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're always on a thing to nothing whenever you try and make predictions about the Champions League before the first knockout round, because, of course, you have that long two-month
period. Oh, yes, we know that, Sid, but just get to the point.
And the games actually happen. But I know. The point is, if I'm honest, I don't see Barcelona going any further in the Champions League. I don't see them getting past PSG at the moment. But there are signs of things starting to fall into place for them. And in terms of the quality of the players they've got up front, they are stronger than, I think, most teams. But I just still feel like they're vulnerable. I still feel like structurally they're still quite open. And yeah, I find it hard to imagine them getting through against PSG, to be honest.
What about you, Don?
Yeah, I just think there's a soft underbelly all of a sudden at Barca. I thought, you know, they seemed invincible a couple of years ago. Everyone was super afraid of them. You know, it was the great, you know, Messi's and Neymar and Suarez and all the Galactico players that they've had. Since they've lost one or two of those players, and one or two players have got a little bit older, I don't think anyone fears Barca anymore. So I think they can probably just about scrape through against PSG, but that'll be as far as they go unless they get really lucky in the draw. I think there's some far bigger teams and better teams ahead of Barca.
Who has a better chance of winning another Champions League, Steve Nicol? Neymar, Cristiano Ronaldo, or Lionel Messi? Or none of them?
I would suggest Neymar, just because of his age. You know, the Ronaldo, no question, is coming to end his career. Messi's on that way. It depends where he goes next. So I would say Neymar because he's got years ahead of him still. And whether it happens at PSG, he could leave, and most of the big sides absolutely would want to sign this guy. So I would say Neymar.
Who is better, Don? Rashford or Sterling?
Oh, my days. What a question that is. Oh. I mean, totally different. Oh, I'd probably have to lean slightly towards Sterling, but ever so slightly.
Why?
I just think he can play a number of positions more so than Marcus Rashford. Marcus Rashford's not a number nine. I don't think he ever will be. I think he can try and play that role, but it's not his strength. He's better off the left-hand side when he's got the ball at his feet or balls over the top. He's one of the quickest out there. Terrific in front of goal. But I think if you're looking at a list of sort of attributes, I think Raheem Sterling would probably tick one or two more, but it's ever so close.
Stevie?
I would say Rashford. I think he's a better finisher than Sterling.
But who's a better player?
Rashford.
Really? Because Sterling left Liverpool?
I think so.
Given Smith Rowe's recent performance for Arsenal, Don, shouldn't attacking midfielder still be their top priority in the transfer window, or should it be another position?
No, why on earth would Arsenal want to go out and buy an attacking player when they've got Smith Rowe?
Yeah, who said that?
Go and buy a top-class midfield player. Go and buy a top-class centre-half. Arsenal have been crying out for that for a decade.
Speaking of crying, whose baby is that crying? Is that yours, Don? Is that your twins?
No, they're shouting, but not crying.
Maybe it's them we can hear. What sort of marking would you prefer while defending the corners? Now, Stevie, when you were at the Revs, am I right in saying you had zonal marking?
Oh, I hate zonal marking.
No, when we were at the Revs, we had exactly what Liverpool did, what I grew up with. That was half and half. Half zonal, half marking.
Don, which did you prefer?
Hybrid. Hybrid, exactly as Stevie said. Hate zonal marking. People don't take responsibility. There's no one culpable after a game. It's your fault. It was your fault. Everyone's just standing there zonal. I've done hybrid at Liverpool. Same as Sunderland with Peter Reid, where you get your three or four best headers of the ball, marking the opposition's three best headers of the ball. and then you have one or two zonal. And in my opinion, that's 100% the best way to go.
Stevie, why are left-footed players generally one-footed, while right-footed players are generally better with their weaker foot? Whenever we picture a one-footed player, lefty like Robin, Di Maria or Mesut Ozil come to mind.
I have absolutely no idea. There's always been something about somebody who's left-footed. It kind of sticks out more,
right?
And I think because it looks a lot more silky because they're left-footed, it makes the right foot look like a cricket bat. You know what I mean? So, other than that, I've no idea.
Don, do you have any theories?
Not a theory, no. I mean, you sort of see it, don't you? Where there's millions of right-footed players. David Beckham comes to mind. Best right-footed player I've seen for a long time had no left foot. And there's other examples, but like Stevie said, all of a sudden you'll get like a left-handed snooker player or a left-footed player in midfield and he zings the ball out there and you go, oh, that was quality, that was a touch of silk. But
No one looks at a left-handed snooker player and goes, oh, look at him do that. No one cares about it. What a ridiculous comparison.
Well, it's not, because the UK Championships is on at the minute. I'm watching it.
So you would be more astounded by a left-hander doing the shot that a right-hander did?
Yeah, because I think that's what the question's leading to, isn't it?
No!
What's the question leading to then?
What? Snooker player. What about tennis? If you're left-handed at tennis, it looks better. Yeah, McEnroe. Yeah. He always looked better than everybody else.
There you go.
Because
he
was left-handed. You're right.
Oh, no, you're right, man. Final question, Tom. Did you ever go shoulder to shoulder on someone and it felt like hitting a brick wall? Was it something you did for an entire game and regret it?
Once I'd done that, and it was the only time in my career I played a game of football, and the next morning, all one side of my body, shoulder, ribs, thigh, everything was just covered in bruises the next morning. And I played against Fort Everton, against Man U, and Yap Stam absolutely buried me from the first minute to the last. And I kept going up for headers after headers after headers, and he just slaughtered me the whole game, and the whole side of my left-hand side of my body just totally bruised after playing 90 minutes against him.
Wow. Not your right side, though. Stevie?
I had a couple. I told you one the other day about Mark Hughes when I booted him. Thought it broke me toe. The other one was I played in a five-a-side tournament in Israel in the off-season. All the Liverpool team went. And we split up into teams and we played this Israeli side. And the field was square. So whenever the ball went in the corner, invariably it got stuck. And then there was a huge battle and everybody was getting fired then. And there was a guy who'd been doing all dancing on it and all the flicks and all that stuff. And he was getting right up my nose. And he was in the corner with the ball, and I thought, right, he can't get out. There's no escape. So I ran over and I rattled him. Unfortunately, I caught the underside of his boot and it ripped my big toenail right off. And that was the end of my five-a-side tournament. I had to go to the hospital.
But more importantly, you played on a square pitch.
Honestly, well, it's a recipe for fighting.
Because it was
at least when five sides are round, then the ball will move around. But when a ball gets stuck in the corner, and you've got guys playing who are taking it seriously, then it's just a recipe for disaster. Unfortunately, I came out on the wrong end of that one.
So there were walls, Stevie. Yeah, it was indoors.
Yeah, indoors.
There we go. Right, that's it. Thank you very much, everybody. Sid, go and enjoy the rest of the snow. Don, go and watch your left-handers play snooker. Oh, right. We'll be back tomorrow to salute Manchester United going top of the table after their victory against Burnley. Any insights, Sid, before we go? Any gems? What's the pager on?
Oh, see if you can guess what Bob Boulder's nickname was.
Oh.
Here are the very clever nicknames for the Liverpool players. Bob Boulder's nickname, The Rock.
He's the original Donald Rock, by the way, Big Bob.
Aldo.
I must have taken a long time to come up with those nicknames.
Oh, dearie me.
That's it. What was your
name? Dalglish.
Stevie, you were Bumper. What were you, Don?
Just Hutch. Or Sammy Lee went for Dutch, actually. Oh. Sammy Lee mixed it up a little bit and went for Dutch.
Lovely. Sid, what's intriguing is that book came out, what, 5 years ago? Why haven't you read it yet?
Well, you know, the table was a bit wonky and I threw the table out this weekend, so I've only just taken it back from underneath the short leg. Hey.
You're just rude, Stevie.
Hey. Hey.
Now, of course.
Sid, I don't care whether you read that or not.
The real reason is that I was refusing to read this until I got Steve to sign it for me. So.
That is it. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.